Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 591, CMT's SPV version 3, part 2, recorded live on August 8th, 2017. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we have a special guest with us tonight to talk about another community project. I think this is just kind of the summer of community projects shows, and then on top of the complete history of Halo. So we're kind of going for a theme, it seems like. But we've actually had this person on before in the past to talk about the project, and there is a second phase of this project, which is nearing completion and will be released here in the next couple of weeks. So we are happy to welcome back CMT's Masters. Welcome back.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. Masters is behind... I don't know if... Are you behind the whole CMT as far as the multiplayer and the single player, or are you just specifically the single player side of things?
Well, historically, I've been behind the majority of the projects, although there is nothing multiplayer planned on our radar, just solely single player projects.
Well, CMT has had multiplayer maps before.
Well, right, yeah, I was in charge of those, but we're going back, now we're going back about 10 years for those. I think the last multiplayer stuff we released was 2008, 2009, or maybe not early. No, it was probably earlier, 2000 and probably early mid 2007.
And that's when I got my big start into Halo. Really, was 2007. So that kind of fits in right there. I distinctly remember some of those maps too, playing on Halo Custom Edition.
Yeah, I think Snowgrove still sometimes has a 24/7 server going on.
Yes, that's one of them.
Which is pretty, I never thought it would last that long. I'm kind of surprised that the gameplay in it has held up that long, too, that people still have an urge to play it.
I think that's the first time I actually saw the Spartan laser in Halo Custom Edition.
Yeah, going back, you know, all we had was some scans. I forget what magazine it was that leaked out, but it had... It had scans of everything, like a really bad scan of the spiker and the mongoose and the laser with just a description. So we pretty much had to kind of wing it and just like heard of these ideas like a nail gun and like a laser you charge up and pretty much had to go from there.
Some good stuff back in the day. So we're going to talk about the second part of SPV3. You released the first part. Was it last year or the year before? I can't... It's not exactly...
Last year, last June 25th.
So we're going to talk about the second part here in a little bit. But first, as always, we have a community update to talk about. So the latest community update doesn't have too much as far as news, but there are some updates coming to Halo 5. A lot of sandbox stuff they're actually looking to continue to fix and to balance. There was a hot fix back in May to fix the heavy aim stuff, and they're still looking into that. They're still working on the 4K update for the Xbox One X. And then there's going to be some fault updates coming to the Halo 5 sandbox for multiplayer as well. So lots of tuning and changes going to be coming there, along with the throwback Halo 3 playlist, which should be coming in September. So that'll be fun. And... we are also going to be seeing a little more in terms of tournaments with the fall season of HCS coming up and the Microsoft Store tournaments. The first one was actually this past Sunday, and I don't think either GT or me got to go. If anyone is in chat that had a chance to go, let us know, and we'll read it out to see how you guys thought it went. The next one is going to be on September 3rd. It's going to be a team doubles tournament, and I'll be in Seattle for PAX, so I won't be able to go to my local one, but depending on the availability, might be able to drop by the one that's local there in Seattle. So we'll see how that goes. And then the next one will be October 8th, which is going to be a 4v4 which has HCS settings tied to it. Well, Pins of Mending went to one, get him into the chat here and have him spill the beans. So the back compat is still being worked on. They don't have an ETA yet on when the 4 titles are going to be released, but they're still working on making sure that the back compat is coming. The team scrimmage playlist has been retired for now from the matchmaking playlist. Double XP weekend is coming up, or was this past weekend. There was Heroic, Warzone, Firefight, Griffball, and Team Arena was double XP. And DLC for Halo Wars 2, which we haven't had a chance to talk about yet, and I don't even know if GT's had a chance to play it, because I haven't had a chance to play it. But Operation Spearbreaker was the UNSC campaign expansion that dropped with, what's the AI? Why am I forgetting your name?
Serena.
Thank you. So that dropped not last week, but the week before. And then in Cologne, Germany, Gamescom is coming the weekend before PAX, so August 22nd, and they'll have the Awakening the Nightmare expansion playable there on the show floor as well. And then HCS London kicks off in September, in the middle of September, September 15th through the 17th. Also on the update, there are some really cool art pieces and other art projects that the community has come up with. You may have seen some of them posted on Twitter through the Halo Twitter account and some other Halo influencers out there. There's also a modded Xbox One controller that lights up, and it's Covenant Purple with blue LEDs, which looks really cool. Did you get a chance to see that, GT?
Yeah, I'm taking another look at it right now. Looks really cool.
Yeah, I don't know how people do this. It's really cool, though. So they took kind of the hexagonal pattern from, I guess, the Halo 5 Fireteam Osiris controller and kind of used that pattern a little bit. And they also have the Elite Skull from the difficulty. Actually, it's just the difficulty shield, the legendary difficulty shield on the other side of the controller. And then they also took, it looks like, the faceplate of the Fireteam Osiris controller and slapped it onto an Elite controller.
I'm thinking about doing that with my Master Chief controller.
How easy is it to pop off those plates without damaging them?
Oh, they come apart pretty easy. The first time you take them apart, they're pretty stiff. You know, the clips don't like to release, so you got to be careful, but they come apart. I've already had one of them apart because I had to steal the thumbsticks out of one of them.
Fair enough. Another art piece on Reddit that's actually done by Wayne Time is another really cool piece to look at. It's Master Chief floating almost like he's a hologram type of kind of like Cortana in a way, but it's Master Chief, and it has some nice glowing effects and some artifacts in the back as well. And then there's a montage contest, which I haven't seen a montage contest in a very long time, but it is over at haloisback.com, which I'm not exactly sure how I feel about that URL, but it is what it is. But it's a montage contest that's open until November 30th, and it's up to, there's over $500 in cash prizes. So if you're interested in learning more about the contest, or if you are wanting to submit your montages, then head on over to haloisback.com. And then there's some community screenshots at the bottom. I don't think we've seen a theme.
Haven't seen that in a while. Yeah,
or a theme one at that. So check that out. And that's really the latest of the community updates that's out there. Lots of mention of sandbox changes coming to Halo 5 multiplayer, and then just a lot of additional community content that's out there.
Yeah, I haven't got a chance to play Operation Spearbreaker yet, because every time I launched the game, it would crash.
Oh, no.
But I was playing it on my laptop. No, oh. I was on my laptop. I haven't tried it on my desktop yet, but...
Gotcha.
But, you know, on my laptop, I was running preview builds for Windows 10, so that probably had something to do with it.
Potentially. So that's the updates that we have. Nothing else big happening news-wise in Halo. I think there's kind of a lull until we get to the DLC Awakening the Nightmare for Halo Wars 2. And from there on out, there's not really going to be much Halo news unless something happens with the Halo TV show.
Yeah, somehow I don't think we're going to hear anything about that this year. I mean, they had a press release where they did say that they were still working on it, but
they did.
I don't think we're going to actually hear anything more about it as far as, you know, what the story is about or anything like that this year. But I could be dead wrong, too.
Are they still working with Showtime on it? That's the last I heard of it. Well, I'm sure they're sticklers, because I know they want it. They were talking at one point about it supposed to compete with Game of Thrones.
I hadn't heard anything like that, but I guess it's possible.
Yeah, I think they want it to be like its own high-budget sort of space fantasy akin to Game of Thrones or something. I mean, it's been going on for so many years, I forget where I saw it. But it'd be awesome if it got to be that popular and that quality.
It's tricky, though, because a lot of video game adaptations to movies or TV shows in that way, and I think Forward to Dawn is kind of an exception a little bit, because it was digital shorts that came out, but if putting it all together, it's actually pretty good. But just the industry of video game to movie hasn't done too well.
Yeah, well, I'm sure part of the problem.
Well, the nice thing about Forward Unto Dawn is it was an original story based in the Halo universe. It wasn't really based on the video game. As long as the TV series does something similar, I think it'll do okay. Is it going to reach Game of Thrones level? I doubt it. But, well, yeah, it's not the subject. It's just the type of show it is. You know, it's really hard for a sci-fi show like that to make it. You know, there's a lot of shows that are, you know, that sci-fi in nature that are really great shows like Firefly that just don't live. Firefly was around for one season, but it has a cult following.
Less than a season, kind of.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's also a really different time, but you do have stuff like Westworld, which I haven't watched yet, but, you know, it was done pretty well and was pretty popular. And Game of Thrones isn't exactly traditional drama. I mean, it's fantasy, but fantasy is, like, only a sidestep away from sci-fi.
Yeah. It's that sci-fi portion that seems to deter a lot of people. They're just, it doesn't seem like, you know, the traditional space opera type TV show lasts for very long, you know, unless it has a name like Star Trek or Star Wars. But, you know, even that.
Yeah, I mean, Halo is probably one of the stronger, like, space brand names. My whole thing with it is I think if they want it to be good, it needs to appeal to people who aren't really into Halo, and I think that's probably where there's a huge conflict of interest, because I'm sure 343 wants it to tie into their stories and, you know, be relevant to the fans. But being relevant to the fans isn't going to really endear it to, you know, the mass public.
So my thing always has been, whenever I've talked about having a Halo movie, is you almost want Master Chief in it because you want people to come watch it. You want the general audience, not necessarily the hardcore, to come and watch it. And the big way to do that would be to get Master Chief involved. But at the same time, you want to leave the games more towards having that exclusive Master Chief experience, and you really want to do the fans a service and expand upon the universe that's already there.
You're right, but I just always think of it in terms of, you know, is my uncle going to want to watch it? Is my, like, 70-year-old dad going to want to watch it?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the problem. You have two different crowds, and it's also, I think, hard because Halo's been around so long to make a story that you can do that isn't going to disappoint fans, because for them, the story has progressed so far. And for other people, the story would be just beginning.
You want to, some way to kind of jump in and then keep people that aren't necessarily involved too much into, I guess, the, what I would call the extended lore outside the games. You want to keep them involved in that, but at the same time, you want to give the hardcore audience something new to digest and to scrutinize.
Yeah, I just think writing it is probably a monumental challenge, and I'm sure that Showtime always puts out quality stuff. I'm sure they want to have their input in it too. I mean, it can't be an easy thing to be trying to write or develop.
Be really interested to see what they come up with.
Or hopefully we find out what they've been trying to come up with, even if it takes 10 years.
Well, there's definitely not going to be any Halo 6 news this year.
No, that will likely be next year.
We can hope.
Just want to give a shout out to VFX Ninja Editor over on Mixer. Thanks for the follow, and thanks for hitting us up over there. For those that are listening, we are slowly making our transition from Twitch to Mixer for certain things. We're still broadcasting on both for our live streams, but we're going to toy around with both and see if the audience over on Mixer helps us out a little bit more. And Mixer's a new platform, so it's kind of a fresh start to get things off the ground. So if you're on Twitch, check us out over on Mixer as well. And if you are listening to us after the fact, check out our live streams. Let's move on to the main topic of the podcast, which is why Masters is here to talk about the Custom Map Teams Single Player Version 3, or in short, CMT SPV3. So, and to clarify, this is a actual mod compared to the last two projects that we've had on, are completely side games that they are working on, Project Contingency and Installation 01. This is an actual mod to Halo Custom Edition for PC. And was this for Mac as well? Or is this just PC
built? No, it's PC only. Although you can run it on a Mac if you're using a boot camp or a virtual machine, but the best way to play it is either on a PC or using a boot camp on a Mac.
Gotcha. And Werven Zoo is also following us over on Mixer, so thanks on dropping by. It's an honor to be in your presence. One of the forging greats of the community. So thank you for dropping by. The first half was released back last year, like Masters mentioned earlier, but coming up, and I think this is August 19th, is that right? Is that still the date?
August 19th, yep, still the planned date.
That's the second half of the campaign mod. And for the first half, you introduced a whole slew of things. So I know we had a podcast with you already on some of the things that you added, but just give us a high-level overview of some of the things that you introduced in the first half, so people that are coming into this kind of new can get caught up to speed.
Oh boy, that's a lot. So for the first half, there were new guns, new enemies, new vehicles, new features on existing stuff, such as everything being destroyable in terms of the vehicles, extended levels with new areas to explore, an entire remake of the Silent Cartographer, loadouts, which would change the way you would approach each mission if you started out with a different weapon set. We had terminals. I'm probably forgetting some other stuff too, but that's sort of the first ones that come to mind.
And additional areas on levels too.
Well, I threw that one in there with the extended levels.
Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, it was a boatload of content that really pushed the game almost as far as we thought we could take it. And now we have the second half, which completes the entire campaign, which has even more than really the game should probably be able to hold. But so far, it's like landing a giant flaming plane and trying to save all the cargo.
And boatload is an understatement, people, because there is a lot, and I mean a lot, of additional content that is in this campaign.
Yeah, well, I mean, the skulls themselves, which I've got to mention earlier, give it, a whole... After you're done playing through it on the original difficulty of normal, heroic, and legendary, we have the new noble difficulty, and then you can put skulls onto any of those difficulties as well. And all of those skulls are pretty selective in how they change the gameplay, whether it be no vehicles, not being able to pick up things that enemies drop. We had some original ones like the Spite Skull, which made your shield timer reset every time you fired your gun throughout encounters. And we actually got rid of the Blind Skull for the new release, and we have a new one we call the Four-Eyes Skull. So as your shields take damage, your vision gets blurrier and blurrier, which is really interesting when you mix it together with that Spite Skull.
Interesting. I have actually not played around with the skulls at all.
Yeah, well, like we were saying, there's a lot of stuff to do in it. You know, the kind of the whole, the thing that always drew me to Halo 1 was, this is, of course, in the days before Xbox Live, was it was a campaign that you could just play over and over and over again and find new things to do and new ways to approach it. And we just wanted to magnify that, you know, tenfold. So the skulls are definitely a part of that.
Very nice. So that kind of gives an update to all the stuff that's happened from the release from last year. So what is, for, because I know we can't really discuss about too much as far as press until, I think it's what, tomorrow or 2 days out from now? But what's some of the new stuff that people are going to be looking forward to, or that you think people will be most impressed with, or it's something that's new that people will be seeing in the second half of the, well, the campaign?
The Flood is definitely the highlight. You know, the Flood, unfortunately, you know, the Flood are interesting because I enjoyed fighting them the most in Halo 1, but Halo 3 I felt had the best amount of features for them in terms of, you know, the ability to infect, the headshot areas. But then unfortunately in Halos 2 and 3 it was never quite integrated the same way it was in 1 as far as three-way fights go. So we kind of really blew open the doors on the Flood. We revisited a lot of the original ideas that Bungie had, such as all the species being infected, environmental hazards, things of that nature. And then we have some stuff from Halo 3, like the real-time infections. So if you're fighting some Covenant and an infection form comes out of nowhere and latches onto one, it'll turn it into a Flood form. And depending on what it is, it could release more Flood forms. So a single little infection form can change the tide of an entire battle and totally change the way that you're interacting with the Covenant, which I think is really cool. I'm not sure if you got to this yet in Two Betrayals, but there's one, there's more than one area. There's a few areas where you can be fighting Covenant, and you'll see like Flood growths on the walls, and if you blow them open, infection forms can come out, and you can use them as a distraction or to make the Covenant fight amongst themselves when they start to become infected. There's all sorts of little interesting things like that with the Flood, which are really cool and really work well with the level design and sandbox philosophies of Halo 1.
So you took the boils from Halo 3 and put them in Halo Custom Edition.
They're kind of like that, a little bit different, but more or less. But they can hold really anything. It can hold combat forms, can hold jackal forms, it can hold infection forms. Sometimes certain ones will hold special weapons like the Void's Tear, the Flamethrower on certain levels. And what's cool about them too is that the stimulus that sets them off has a percentage chance. So sometimes when you go into a room, you never know which one is going to explode, and it creates a sense of paranoia. So you, when you go into a room and you see pods all over the walls, you don't want to destroy them all because you'll be overrun by the Flood. At the same time, you're never really sure what each one is going to do.
So there's a little bit of randomness to it. It's not going to be the same every time.
Right. Well, part of the thing we wanted to do was really kind of get into the psychological aspect of the Flood that they had in parts of Halo 1 and Halo 2 and, you know, put players on edge. You know, we wanted almost there to be a sense of paranoia. So when you go into a room and you see pods over the walls, you know, you're looking up and you hear something and you're scared at every turn. When you hear something burst, you don't know if it's a carrier form. You don't know if it's a pod. If it's a pod, you don't really know necessarily what's going to release. We really wanted to kind of build up what was sort of described in the books, even for the Chief, is, you know, this constant dread and fear, which was a cool thing to do because Halo 1 didn't really have the time to do that originally outside of 343 Guilty Spark.
Okay. And you have, I mean, your team has had several years to work on it, so you have a lot of time to add and refine different options.
Well, the Flood stuff really has all come together in the past year. Sorry, my your voice cut out and I started talking over you.
Oh, no, you're good.
But what I was saying was that, you know, most of the part two stuff, like a lot of the ideas were around for a while, but we only really got to start implementing them about 8-9 months ago. So the process for the second half is at a much shorter period of time, but the, you know, the brunt of the work was already done with part one. You know, all the areas that we were going to revisit had already existed. We already had ideas for what we wanted to do. Some stuff, the pods especially, turned out to be a lot harder to implement than we wanted to. And then sometimes, you know, we had to change direction. One thing which hopefully people aren't too upset about is that we announced early on that we were going to have our own version of the Prometheans in it. And we had the Soldier and the Knight redesigned in the Bungie aesthetic. But maybe about three, four months after we revealed our plans for that, it just became apparent that there was no room for them within the encounters. as it would turn out, if we had gone forward with them, we would have just not had space in the game to implement them.
So for some of the additions that you're putting in here, are you more doing it just because the sandbox allows it and you're taking stuff from the myriad of Halo games that are out there now and just kind of stuffing as much in there? Or are you trying to make this somewhat canonically relevant?
Well, we have our terminals, so we're able to kind of sidestep around some of the lore and explain things. Some of our terminals go a little bit more in depth about the Gravemind and things of that nature, as well as the containment, how the containment was breached on Halo. Most people probably don't remember this, but back in the day, there was some debate whether the Master Chief himself was responsible for the release of the Flood. Because when he goes to the security installation on the Silent Cartographer, the second that he deactivates the security on the installation, that's when you lose contact with keys. So we have a series of terminals in 343 Guilty Spark that kind of explain how the Flood outbreak happened. In 343, talking about the different stages of the Flood and how they navigate the ring and how they take knowledge from things that they infect. So we work with the lore. Some of it's fleshing out in areas that haven't necessarily been talked about before in official media. But in terms of what we've added, you know, everything has to have a purpose. You know, it has to change or make the gameplay more interesting in one way or another. And we went through a fair amount of different weapons that we had ideas for the second half that we wanted to introduce, eventually settling on 5. One which actually appears now in the earlier maps we released. So there's a new weapon called the Brute Piercer, which if you anyone remembers the Halo MMO, it's actually based on one of the guns shown in there for the Brutes. It's like a little burst fire pistol, similar to the Bolt Shot. It's able to home in on the Flood's infected region. So their little headshot area, it can home in on and pop the infection form in their chest. So that gets added to the first 6 missions.
Oh.
And then in the second half, we have the Halo 2 turret that Johnson would often use and set up in areas. And then we also have the flamethrower, which is kind of a blend of what it was in Halo 3 and in Halo 1 for the PC and the MCC. And then we have 2 variants of the Sentinel Doom.
Okay. I've seen a couple of the Sentinel Beam ones. I hadn't seen the pistol thing that you were talking about.
Yeah, it's held. It's funny because after Halo 4 came out, we had concepted a bunch of weapons based on things in it, but more fitted for the Covenant. And 2 of those were what we were calling at the time a binary needler, which never made it into part 1 and got scrapped for the Sentinel Sniper in part 2. And the other one was a carbine bolt shot, which was going to kind of be like carbine technology, but that would function similarly to the bolt shot. So the piercer was kind of like the Halo 5 bolt shot, but it only appears in high-ranking grunt and high-ranking brute ranks. So it's not like everybody has a homing projectile on you that fires super fast at you, like the crawlers do in Halo 5. So it's kind of like an elite weapon. Well, not elite species, but, you know, a high-end weapon for high-end ranks.
Okay. For doing the second half of the campaign, did you bring on more people to work on assets or weapons, or did you just kind of reuse the same team? And it doesn't sound like it took as long because a lot of the groundwork was done.
We had a relatively smaller team on this one. We had some new people who came in, one person who completely revamped the UI. We have a new loader for the game, which makes everything so much easier to configure than the old way using the OpenSAW settings. It also makes the installation method a lot easier too. You didn't have it in your build, Dustin, because I know you had some problems. But now we're about to test it in full tomorrow. But the way it works is when you first boot up the game, when you first boot up the installer, it'll check to see if you have Halo Custom Edition installed. And if you don't, it'll install the game for you. And then it'll install SPV3 to a separate directory and then put the shortcut on your desktop. So there's, you know, it's basically going to be a few, you know, 3 clicks to install, you know, play, and you're good to go. There's no, you know, navigating Windows, dropping files into places, or having to extract anything with the right software. You know, we're trying to make it as easy as possible for people to install. And part of the launcher, too, also works with a new program called Chimera, which allows the game to play in 60 FPS, like on the MCC. And that's something that's currently in beta, and we're going to be releasing the 60 FPS feature in beta. But as the developer of Chimera keeps working on it, we can push updates to people. So you'll get a little notification before you boot the game that there's an update available. You can go on and grab this very small file, throw it into your game, and things will keep evolving.
So what's the difference of that? Because I know before Halo Custom Edition supported 60 frames per second.
Yeah, but the animations wouldn't. Trying to put this in terms that won't get people lost. The animations wouldn't be as smooth because the animations were still animating at 30 frames per second. So even though your movement would move as if you were playing at 60 FPS, enemies would appear jerky. And now that's all been fixed. So you can play at whatever frame rate you want, and the animations will blend to that frame rate. So if you want to play at 144 FPS, you can, and the animations will all look good.
So explain the launcher a little bit, because this is something a little bit new, and from the last build, or from the one that was released last year, which was kind of an integration straight into your custom edition install, this one is a separate set of executables and files altogether.
Problem is, you know, Halo CE is pretty old now, and people are always working on different apps that inject themselves in different ways. And what we were finding was too many people were having conflicts with other people's programs, so it just became easier to say, like, you know, pretty much everybody has a lot of hard drive space these days. You know, the game isn't that big. So it was easier to say, let's just make a duplicate install, make sure they have all of the files that we know they need to have. And if they want to add stuff into their multiplayer game, they can. But this one separate directory, we can tell them to add whatever they want and it won't conflict with anything else. Part of the hope is also that using this launcher, in the future, we can actually have it manage different single-player campaigns. So if you want to play SPV1 or SPV2, the launcher can support that and change files in your special Halo SPV3 install. So that next time the game boots up, it can show you whichever iteration of the mod you want to see, as well as our future project, which, you know, hopefully will release in a year and a half or so.
When are you giving the hints to that?
We've talked about it a little bit on our Discord, but it's basically a sequel to ODST minus the open world.
Okay, so kind of your normal rail shooter for Halo, but done in the confines of, I guess, ODST feel instead of the Spartan feel.
More or less. The code name of it is Oddball because we're going to be doing a lot of stuff that's really different. The kind of funny thing is a lot of people always comment on YouTube. There's obviously a lot of resentment towards 343 and frustration. And, you know, so many people think that our mod is a response to that, when really the mod and my entire involvement in Halo and modding and development really came because I was one of those people not happy with Halo 2, and then also felt let down by 3, and then again by Reach. So it was kind of our way of saying, well, what are all these ideas that are shown in these games? How would we have wanted to see them be implemented into the Halo sandbox? And that was kind of the genesis of me getting involved in this stuff. A lot of people assume that, you know, the whole mod is a response to being angry at 343 when it's really not the case. Halo 4 ranks in one of my favorite Halo games. Halo 5 definitely has its faults, but there's things I really do like about it and other things that I really don't. But, you know, it's not a response to 343's failings as much as it is things we felt weren't really done well within the Bungie games. So with the next project we're doing, it's really kind of be examining a lot of the stuff that 343 has done and putting our own twist on it, just like we did with all of Bungie's ideas and content. So things like reviving your teammates, possibly Rex, the art style, it's all going to be derived from what 343 was doing. It'd probably be best to describe it as a blend of ODST and Halo 4, with some hints of 5 thrown in.
Okay. Is it going to be basically your own story as well?
I've had a lot of criticisms about the story as far as Bungie's games have gone. So this is going to kind of be our take of, you know, what really makes a good Halo story? How does it tie in with the extended universe?
Good luck.
Well, being a sequel to ODST, it does have to account for what went on in New Blood. That's definitely going to be touched upon. You know, it's fun to be able to try something new and do something that we haven't done before, rather than just, you know, make more guns, make more enemies, and build encounters around it. Now we have to think about story and theme and how we really want to kind of weave it into the overall Halo narrative in a way that makes sense and people can feel as part of the official story without it being an official product.
Something that can be easily...
It has to be accessible, yeah.
...seen or related, like tie into to lore without being official.
Pretty much, yeah.
And we've seen other things do that before, too. Like Fistful of Arrows and a few other Machinima projects try to kind of tie into the Halo story without being officially part of the story. GT, you have any questions?
No, but I would like to thank Masters for coming up with the installer.
Well, the credit goes to one of our guys. You know, you guys asked me earlier if anybody was on, and now everybody's on in the Discord. But, you know, he came to us with a few ideas, and it's kind of evolved and snowballed. And part of the other reason for the launcher, too, is that since we can, every time you go to play, we can give you a little message, like a message of the day. You know, it lets us say things like if there's an update, perhaps, or, you know, we have like a weekend challenge we want to see if people can complete. Say we say like, have you, you know, one weekend we can just be like, have you beat Assault of the Control Room with no vehicles yet? You know, record a video and with the key skull on and upload it to win a prize. We can do stuff
that's
like that.
Cool. Yeah.
But also, we can also start to use in the future to do some memory editing in the game. And that's kind of how the skulls and CE anniversary work. So it also opens up for us to be able to doing skulls outside of the game, where the little launcher can actually see when you load up a map with a certain skull on that you configure in the launcher. And we could do stuff like Famine or Boom and stuff like that potentially in the future too. So yeah, The launcher is like a big thing going forward. There's only so much we can do within the confines of the game. And by requiring the launcher, we can start to open up stuff in the future, you know, that we couldn't previously do inside the game itself.
Would one of those things happen to be achievements?
There's been some talk about it. There are actually a lot, like this is going 10 years ago. There was some work being done on some sort of, you know, scoring system for Halo. So we've discussed the possibility of trying to follow in their footsteps. But, you know, so far everything is really focused on getting SPV3 out the door and getting started on the next project. And all that stuff will be reassessed at a later date. And if it can be integrated with SPV3 with some minor updates, then we'll do that too.
Awesome. Flat Bunny in our Mixer chat is asking about score tech or campaign scoring.
Yeah, campaign scoring isn't something that we can presently do, but, you know, like I said, hopefully in the future, maybe one day we can look into it. I would love to have it, but some of the ways that we have stuff work could... Some of the ways that we do things are convoluted and it could create problems through whatever methods were previously explored. So we'll just have to see. I'm a little bit more concerned about having the functionality of the launcher first and certain gameplay and certain features that could be integral to gameplay than I am scoring. Because ultimately scoring, it's enjoyable, and I always play with it. One of my favorite things about MCC was being able to have it. But at the end of the day, the scoring doesn't necessarily impact the game you're playing. It's just a more, you know, it gives it replayability, but it doesn't change the way you approach the game, if that makes any sense.
If you were to have something like scoring, though, that would kind of change the way that you approach the game. I mean, it does in the regular Halo games. Anyways.
Well, Rep, I'm talking more in terms of mechanics and how you interact with the levels and the enemies. Yeah. But it would be really cool to have, especially since, you know, people hate the term always online with the console, but your computer is always online. Or if it's not online, it's connected online shortly after. So it'd be really cool to have some sort of leaderboards and stuff like that. I'd really love to have that as a community feature, possibly one day. Yeah, people are pretty excited for that for MCC as well. But
And I know we've had this discussion personally, but what's your take on doing something in Halo 2 Vista?
There's actually been some developments with people trying to do things in Halo 2 Vista. For me, Halo 2 has some pretty big problems at its core, one being that the story dictates a lot of the encounters and dictates how the sandbox can be implemented. The other is that the levels themselves are some of the most linear in the franchise, and that themselves makes it really hard to do interesting things in, because ultimately you're kind of always having to get by certain barriers, and there's not as much experimentation that's possible as you can in something like Halo 1 with really wide open areas. You know, so we'll have to see. If the capabilities are there, I would certainly want to mess with it. But, you know, people have been trying to make it more capable for years, and there's always progress. But for me, at least, I don't really know when the progress will finally make it far enough that it becomes viable for us to start a project on it.
Okay. But not even necessarily, because, I mean, your first... For the first SP versions, you didn't exactly add too much to it. It was just mostly graphical and UI and weapon improvements. So, for...
No, I mean, even stuff like that is very difficult to do right now in Halo 2 Vista. Specifically because, even to this date, we can't actually recompile the maps. You can go in and edit things in them, but that's not really... that's not really the right way of doing things, because suppose you want to change something like the SMG spread, then you would have to go and manually make changes to every map and the way that their map system works. You know, some things are held in shared maps and some things aren't. You know, it's like, you know, you would think something that's really simple, like the SMG needs some adjusting in its damage. It needs to be rebalanced. The SMG is too good. You know, you would have to go through to, you know, different maps and make changes each one rather than make the change once and then hit compile on 10 different maps.
Yeah, I can see where that's a little bit of a pain.
Yeah, well, I mean, where's that a pain? Things can get out of sequence, you know, if you don't make the change to all of them or you accidentally pass over a map, you know, something as simple as, you know, getting a phone call or going downstairs to get, you know, dinner, you know, and then you come back like, oh, did I make that change or did I not make that change? And all it takes is for one thing to fall through. Where you have
but that's why you have beta testers.
Well, I mean, that's part of the problem with SPV3 now too. Even though we have like a huge amount of testers, it's just gotten so big, it's, you know, testing has become very difficult, you know. So that's one of the nice things about the launcher too. You know, once we get feedback from everybody, we can always release a patch and, you know, and alert everybody that it's available to download. Now we're aiming to make it as perfect as we can. There's some stuff that are bugs in it that are just in the, you know, in the backbone of the entire project, which would be very tricky to go in, replace, and make sure everything else stays the same. And then there's other things, you know, which we can definitely fix, you know, within 2 minutes of knowing about it. You know, so hopefully those 2 minute fixes, if there's, you know, 40 of them that need to be done, once we get out in the public's hands, we can make those changes, you know, deliver an update and get it to every single user of the mod.
And there's a couple other new things about the launcher as well that I don't know if you want to touch on, but the ability to like custom set screen resolution and other settings before actually launching the game, and then having a default controller layout for Xbox controllers. I don't know if you want to touch on any of those kind of extra features.
And there's another one too, which is called EAX, which kind of gives you the reverberations and echoes that the Xbox version had. That's something that we have, that we allow people to enable. It doesn't work on all machines, but it works on most. But yeah, we also have the ability for you to select whatever the resolution is on your screen. Whatever resolution your monitor is, you can set it to match that, because the in-game UI sometimes has problems with certain machines. I'm not exactly sure why. Obviously, Halo's UI and interface is very, very old now. That thing shipped in 2003, and it's 2017, so... The launcher can override that part of the UI, as well as for controllers. We have, you know, pre-configured controller arrangements, including one that's designed just for SPV3. So you can just select one of those and it'll activate once you have a controller put in your profile in Halo CE.
I didn't know you could select multiple ones, because when I didn't see a place in there where you said you could like select different defaults. I had to go in and manually set all the ones I want to change, and then assign and deassign the ones that I didn't want to actually be assigned anything.
Yeah, well, actually, you got that. I know that Yumi was earlier today looking at ways and making that a little bit more clear, because a lot of people, including myself, have often just glanced over the controller settings because it kind of fades into the background a little bit too much. So there'll be some changes to that before we launch as well. Yeah, and the great thing is that we can also always push an update afterwards, and if, you know, we can do that. Or if we see that people are asking a lot on the Discord or the subreddit questions about the controllers, we can always change the message of the day to give people a little blurb about that every time they go to play. One thing we weren't expecting with the first half is it actually got over 100,000 downloads. And unfortunately, we have no way to communicate with those people every time they go load up the game. And now we can. So that should, hopefully that will, allow us to have a much better and direct line with everybody.
And just having the message of the day, I think, well, would the launcher be able to like automatically update it?
It doesn't have the ability to install updates just yet. We're leaving people the option to just do that on their own.
Could be like a big box or something.
Yeah, when we can say, it also the launcher has links to the Wikia and the subreddit. So we can say if there is an update out and what it fixes and people want to update, they can. We actually have a pretty big following in South America and Mexico, as well as in India. We have a lot of players, and sometimes they only have so much bandwidth or limited bandwidth. So we don't want to really be pushing stuff on people other than, sometimes adding new pictures into the launcher, without their knowledge or starting auto downloads or stuff like that. And sometimes people, depending on how computer savvy they are, some people don't understand anything beyond a zip file. Some people will use better compression methods. That gives people the option to download in whatever method they want.
Well, I think that's just something where you can have a tick box in there that says enable, like have it disabled at start, but somewhere in there just say enable auto updates or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the launcher just doesn't have that capability yet, but that's something, we do want to explore in the future.
Because, I mean, just about every other app that I have on my desktop auto-updates. I mean, XSplit, Discord, Twitch, Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, but we're also a third-party mod and not a verified software developer, so some people might be antsy about allowing a third party to put files on their computer.
Yeah, just give us the option, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah, like I said, we want that in the future, but the priority was getting the basics done right so people would have the easiest experience installing it at first.
Makes sense. And is there anything else that you guys have wanted to try to put into this but weren't able to?
Oh, man.
Any big ones?
I mean, even though we didn't really have much of a role for them, I was really excited for what we were doing with our Sentinel Knights and Sentinel Soldiers, and some of that stuff is being recycled into the next project. Actually, it's being integrated into the Hunters and the Elites in some interesting ways, which I'm excited to do. Man, what else? I mean, we certainly had some weapon ideas that we wanted to do. With weapons, it's interesting because sometimes you decide less is more in certain ways, and this sounds kind of funny, considering we have like something like 20 or 30 weapons.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, but sometimes there's things like, you come into idea, it's like, for example, we have the Jackals with the sniper rifles that will use the human sniper rifles later in the game. And they have this cool kind of little glint system on their scope. So when the Jackals look down the scope and take aim at you, you can tell. So you can duck into cover. And stuff like that is something I wish we got to explore more, but unfortunately they're sort of isolated to like 1.5 missions. And then there's other stuff too where you think like, man, I've been using this warthog for like 15 years. Wouldn't it be interesting if it wasn't a warthog and it was something else? But that's really why we're doing another project after, because there's a lot of really kind of obscure ideas that we want to explore or things that we kind of held back with. Because the thing with SPV3 is that it's based on the original game. So you kind of have to have certain things. Otherwise, the entire way the original encounters fall apart and they all have to be reconfigured. One of those being always, in Halo 1, you always have a pistol. In an Armad, you always have a DMR, battle rifle, carbine, or pistol. It'd be interesting to see, what if you didn't have that utility weapon in the same role, which is kind of one of the things that made us want to do a ODST-esque campaign later, where we could kind of pull back on some of that stuff and focus more on more intimate close quarters combat and things like that.
Anyone in the chat have any questions? I know I asked out there, but I don't think anyone has any questions really. Yeah, this will be available on August 19th for everybody. And I know this probably isn't going to be bug free, but there's a Discord and there's a Reddit for people to check this out on. You want to tout where people can catch all the info for this?
Yeah, the the best place to get info is on our subreddit, and that's reddit.com/halo/spv3. And there you can find links to our Discord. We have a Wikia page that's going up soon that'll kind of document everything in the mod, from changes to developer information, and all sorts of cool stuff like that. That was planned to launch at launch, but now it's going to be coming probably after. You know, and I guess that's, for the most part, that's it.
So, since this is SPV3, will there be an SPV4?
People ask us all the time, specifically if co-op is ever possible. I mean, I should probably address co-op. No, it doesn't have co-op, and unfortunately, even if Halo CE ever does get the capabilities for co-op, so much of the back end of our stuff, our armor abilities, alternate gunfire modes, wouldn't work with it. And we also had to strip some of the co-op support from the original game just to make room for all the new content. So there is a zero chance that SPV3 will ever work with co-op. As far as an SPV4, there'd have to be a pretty monumental reason for us to do it. No, I don't even know what that would be, but we'll just have to see what the community does, and maybe one day there will be.
Cool.
But I've had my fair share of the Halo 1 campaign for too long now. I'm looking forward to hopefully not touching it for a long, long time, other than playing it
and bug fixes and whatever.
It's just been such a long process for this. I mean, SPV3 is now really started development and... September 2013.
I was going to say 2003.
Yeah. But, you know, lots of assets date back, 10 years. There's been multiple iterations on things in it as well over the years. So, it's been a long, long time that we've been involved with these levels, even if the SPV3 development, as I like to say, only started about 4 years ago. So I'm just so excited to be doing something new and hopefully something that doing something beyond what SPV3 was ever capable of being.
Okay. GT, one last chance.
Have you ever thought about just building your own standalone Halo game?
I have. I mean, obviously there's contingency and Installation 01 and El Dorito all going on now. The thing for me is I'm not really that interested in doing multiplayer stuff for the foreseeable future. Especially on the PC, you kind of have a disconnect. If you look at El Dorito, at least the El Dorito servers right now, because I know they're still working on a balance fix, and you look at Halo 1 PC and CE, and you look at Halo 5 Forge, it's not the Halo PC crowd doesn't seem to gravitate towards competitive gameplay as much. And I'm not really sure if I would want to do a non-competitive, focus on a non-competitive Halo multiplayer, and on top of that, there's already three teams working on Halo multiplayer. So I'm more curious to see what they all do. Well, there's Glass 2, there's El Dorito, there's Contingency, Installation 01, and
yeah, Glass.
Am I forgetting one?
You got said it. Yeah, those are the four. But I guess just to expand on what Masters was saying, there are a lot of multiplayer projects out there, and they have done multiplayer in the past. I think there's plenty of effort out there that if people want to get involved with the multiplayer side of things, then there's a couple projects to explore that. And really, I think with the CMT team, it's just they're taking the engine of what they can do with the existing Halo storyline and the campaign. But with multiplayer, it's a little more freeform. You're open to a little more to do what you want to do. For the campaign side of things, unless you're building your own campaign from scratch, there's not much wiggle room.
Not sure where I cut off, but I was saying, yeah, there's, I mean, you're counting, yes, Glass too, right? Yeah. I know Glass is focusing on single player stuff, but you really have, what I was trying to say was, you really have to kind of nail the fundamentals of Halo first, typically with a multiplayer environment, before you can really start getting into all the nitty-gritty of a campaign. And there's already a lot of teams doing that, and it's a lot of work to get there. Some of those teams have been working on it for 3 or 4 years. As far as doing something that would be a new multiplayer game, you already have three multiplayer-focused games, being El Dorito, you have Installation 01 and Contingency, and then on top of that, you also have Halo 5 Forge that's out there, you have Halo 1 PC, and you have Halo 2 Vista with the Cartographer project. So for me, the multiplayer scene is already really crowded, and I would rather do something different. I also tend to find that a lot of times on the PC, people aren't that interested in competitive play. If you look at the, at least every time I log on to El Dorito, or I go into Halo 5 Forge, and even a lot of times on Halo CE, people mainly just want to kind of play fun, goofy modes, and not necessarily something that's competitive. And I would want to focus on the competitive aspect. I'm just not sure if the PC crowd is that interested in it. And if they are, there's already so many games in development. I'm sure one of them will be able to satisfy them. So I prefer working on campaign stuff where I can kind of do a more tailor-made experience with, don't want to say one set vision, but more of something that'll stand out on its own and not, quote-unquote, compete with other games for population.
And we've had two of those projects on the show already.
Yeah, I've listened to them. I mean, they're all doing really great work. It's just, there's two original Halo multiplayer projects out there, plus El Dorito. You know, it's a busy scene, and if, you know, Halo 6 or Xbox 360 backward compatibility ever comes to PC, it's going to be even more crowded.
That's true. We had a question from Flat Bunny again.
There's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah. We had another question from Flat Bunny again. He's asking if there are any Easter eggs in the second part of SPV3 that's coming out.
All right. I don't know what I cut out on last time about.
So there's another question from Flat Bunny. He asks, is there any Easter eggs to look for in the second part of SPV3 that's going to be released?
Well, on each level, we've redone the way we've done terminals. So in the first half of the game, there are 12 to 18 terminals for the first 6 missions to find. And then some of those missions also have specific skulls that you can find as well. And then in the second half, there are 6 to 9 different terminals you can find on each level. And then there is other little hints of things, you know, little smaller Easter eggs you can find elsewhere. Some that you can only find on Noble
Difficulty. So I need to do some terminal videos.
Yeah, well, they're all text-based. And your build, some of them are being revised.
Yep.
So hopefully some those of them will
open in the tomorrow. OpenSOS window, and some of them are just text on the screen.
Yeah, some of them. So there's still a few little things to change of that. The terminals were a cool idea. I don't think we'll ever really do it again, just because the implementation of them is just so long to do. And every time you make a change, it's a process, because first you have to change it in whatever text editor you're using, then it has to be made into a bitmap, then that bitmap has to be added in-game, and it's not like, you know, it's not that like you see a spelling mistake or you want to change something, you just go in, type a few things. You know, it's a multi-step process through, you know, 3 different files. It's just a mess and a headache to do. The nice thing about the next project will be is all the story can be told through dialogue and environment and stuff like that, and not necessarily finding data pads.
Not like Halo Reach.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure which terminals you've read, but there is some of them there that are really cool. There's a particular one I really like that's on the mission Keys, which I won't spoil if you haven't found it, or spoil it for anyone, but it's like a really dark, twisted terminal that kind of examines Keys' mental state as he's infected by the Flood. Like, we all have those moments where we're falling asleep and our mind starts to wander, and it's kind of like that, but it's his own thoughts being, like, drifting towards that of the Flood's instincts, and it's got some really kind of grotesque, creepy stuff, which I don't think an official Halo game could really ever touch on.
Was it pulled from the books, or inspired from the books?
A little bit, kind of. We kind of have in our terminals also, like, our own talk of, you know, how exactly does the Flood absorb intelligence? Which I think is really cool, because that's never really been touched on other than the book The Flood. You know, and that whole book is kind of, I don't want to say in flux or up in the air, but there's a lot of stuff in there that's very inconsistent with what was later established later on. Like the fact none of the Covenant talk about the Great Journey, or the Covenant having, you know, spines. You know, some of the events are a little bit odd, including like the time frame of how long all the events took place, things of that nature. You know, the fact that despite being Keys' perspective, he never talks about Miranda things like that. So, you know, ours kind of helps, you know, bridge the gaps between some of the stuff in the Flood and the rest of the series.
Sounds good. Well, thank you, Masters, for being on the show. Thanks for talking about the second part of SPV 3. That'll be coming out in a couple of weeks.
A couple days. Well, not a couple days. Like
11 days.
I'm not sure when this is airing, but by the time this, as of recording, 11 days.
So a couple weeks from when we're recording.
Or rather, 10 days and about 1 hour and 12 minutes as of right now.
How much is the workload to get the final build done? How many checkboxes do you still have to check off? Add another one up there, York. I think he just dropped again. I have a notepad's worth of edits going on.
Edit here, edit here.
Yeah.
No, you already did 4. This is 5.
Should just add a text box. Here, I'll add a text box real quick. There you go.
Yeah, you might want to shrink that a little
bit. Yeah, I'm working on it. All right, waiting for Neil to come back. There he is. Yes, you are. All right. So there you go. They got the little counter up there. Oh, geez. Yeah, I know, Pens. I got to get OBS working in the future. What was I saying before Masters dropped off?
I don't know. I'm still stuck on this. This is sucks.
Oh, geez.
You were starting to wrap it up.
But yeah, by the time this podcast comes out, yeah, it might be a little shorter, but as of this recording, it's 11 days.
10 days, 1 hour, and 10 minutes.
There will be, I think, a lot of links going a lot of places, but the main places that you'll be able to find it are on, I guess, the subreddit?
The subreddit will be where the release will be. And we're also on Facebook as well, and you can follow us there.
Gotta get with the times. Gotta get Twitter, man.
No, I have mine, but
CMT Twitter.
That's more personal use.
Yeah, CMT Twitter.
Yeah, we should probably start one of those, but we'll probably just create a new Twitter for our next project. Since technically, with the next project, it won't be CMT anymore. It'll just be the dev team for the name of the next project, which I can't reveal because it has too many spoilers in it.
I guess last question before I officially wrap this up. Would there be any interest to go back into making multiplayer maps for Halo CE?
Not really. I don't really think our team is necessarily equipped for it anymore. You know, most of our stuff is involved in the single player stuff, and that's creatively where all of our minds are. You know, I've thought about in the future doing something like just a, it would be more of just taking some of the El Dorito weapons and stuff in Halo Online and doing its own and throwing together its own sandbox in a few maps, but I know they're still working on some of the more advanced mod support and stuff, so I'm keeping an eye on that, and maybe one day I'll do that. But no, nothing planned for CE necessarily. Also, the modding scene for multiplayer has vastly changed since I last messed with it. There's a lot of external apps, and a lot of the capabilities that you do now in terms of modding are outside of the Halo editing kit. So we'd have to get up to speed on stuff like that. There'd be a new learning curve for us, too.
Fair enough. So, Masters, thanks for coming on the show. Remember to go check him out. He's on Twitter. And then the official place to find SPV3 will be on Reddit. Reddit.com/r/HaloSPV3. You can also check us out over on all of our social media channels. We are on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Discord. If we have it, just podtacular.com/whatever it is. We'll take you there. And we're also part of a podcasting network, thepodcast.com. You can find other great gaming-related podcasts such as Guardian Radio, Critcast, The Learning Cliff, what was the other one? Podcast 76, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. You can head on over to thepodcast to find those podcasts and learn more about them. And when you go over there, let them know that we sent you. We will be back next week with part 3 of the untold complete story of Halo. So get on your readers, get caught up on the episodic journey that changes hands from Bungie to 343. in the Halo franchise. So we'll see you all next week. And until then, keep on fragging hunters on the Pillar of Autumn, because those things are scary on the Pillar of Autumn.